Hello and welcome to the podcast for Sound the Trumpet, How to Blow Your Own Horn, read by me, John Hardham, the author. I've been away for a few weeks, so my apologies if you've been waiting for this chapter. The fives of you that are actually subscribed to this podcast, appreciate your patience. I've been off in Alaska restocking my freezer with salmon, so happy to report that it is now fully restocked and I can get on with my life. It's great to be back home. Anyway, this time we're doing Chapter 20, Gear to Grind Through. "The notes are in the horn. Find them," said Charles Mingus, bass player. This chapter covers all the kinds of gear that is out there. Well, maybe not all of it, but a lot of the gear that's out there for us trumpet players. And this includes tuners, metronomes, microphones, recording devices, some cases, electronics, effects, devices, and a few other things, too. Some terms to know. MM is Maisel's metronome, or metronome marking, used to indicate tempo. So, for example, MM equals 120 is the same as 120 beats per minute, or BPM. You might see that too. Cent, C-E-N-T, is a measurement of sound. There are 100 cents in a half step. XLR is an audio cable that's used to connect microphones to audio devices. It has three pins and provides what's called a balanced input. An effects pedal is a device used to shape amplified sound. When you see a guitar player stomping on a pedal, that's usually an effects pedal. Track is a distinct selection of music from a recording. In recording, it can also be one particular channel of a recording. Some people use it that way. So, why do you need more stuff? Some of the items in this chapter are not necessary. And you should keep in mind that the most important things in this adventure of yours is making music. And for that, all you need is your horn. You don't even need a case. Charlie Parker often carried his alto sax around in a paper bag. Of course, that was because he was a heroin addict and probably couldn't afford a case. But, you know, anyway. You get the idea. So, that being said, there are some big benefits with a lot of this stuff, and some of the benefits are so incredibly important and helpful that you really should get the thing. I'll let you know if it's a must-have item. So, the first thing is one of these must-have. It's a metronome. Your rhythmic best friend. The tool is crucial if you want to be the best player you can be. Now, this is an old opinion of mine. I've run into some debate on Dave Douglas's site as to whether the metronome is clearly as great a tool as it is purported to be. You can go check out his blog if you want to check out that. I'll put a link on the podcast website. But I still believe in the metronome. The metronome will not only help you stay steady in tempo, but will also be a useful tool in achieving the fastest possible tempos for your exercises or performance pieces. So get one and use it early and often. You won't regret it. There are a bewildering number of varieties, however. I've got a few of the best ones down below. Before you decide, consider getting a combination tuner metronome. See some options for those after this section. You probably want a metronome with a headphone jack. Trumpet is a pretty loud instrument, and it's loud enough to drown out the click of a pendulum metronome or wind-up metronome. The great thing about the pendulum metronome or the wind-up metronome is that they're low-tech. They don't take any batteries. You just wind it up, set the weight, and away it goes. The weight slides up and down. Usually the higher the weight on the pendulum arm, the slower the tempo. And I use one of these Toctel Mini, which is like $30, for my guitar practice. It's a great little metronome. There's also the Boss Dr. Beat 88. This one is pretty spendy. It's got enhanced memory and beat combination functions. It memorizes tempos, beats, rhythm level settings, and can perform time signatures up to 15 beats per measure. It's got independent slider-based controls for desired volumes, and has a tap function, so you can tap in a tempo, and it will, you know, tell you what you're tapping in. It's got a large value dial and a custom LCD for user interface, for easy user interface. So there's also the Boss Dr. Beat 12, which is much smaller. It's credit card sized. It's got combined beats. You can tap tempo like the other one, the tune mode with chromatic tuning, which is a good bonus, and very fine pitch adjustment. Timer mode with a 60-minute timer in 1-minute increments. I'm not sure why you use that, or stopwatch for that matter. And a headphone jack. There's also the Yamaha Click Station. That's another spendy one. It vibrates, so you can feel the beat as well as hear it. And that might be important. In fact, that would be kind of cool. You should try that. It can subdivide a beat, has volume adjustment, and 86 user memory locations. It's got a 10-key pad and a jog dial for entering rhythm and tempo information and accessing click station functions. It's a backlit display. It's got a MIDI in jack, which could be really good, and a trigger input that allows it to be connected to a Yamaha DTX pad to start or stop the metronome. So you could actually use it as an instrument if you're into that sort of thing. Then there's the QuickTime QT3, the quartz metronome. It's a little bitty one. It's probably the size of a small camera. It's got a speaker that projects clear clicks and cuts through. It's a pretty good sound. It's got more than 200 speed settings. It's got an A440 tuning tone. That's 440 hertz, I think. Kilohertz? Hertz? Gosh, I don't remember. But that is the A, the concert A, that orchestras use for tuning. It's got a low battery indicator, so of course these ones I've been talking about do take batteries, and an earphone jack. It's only 3.5 by 2.5. $15, so that's pretty good too. There's the Korg MM2. This is a metronome that slips over your ear. It's got 39 tempo steps, 40 to 208 beat per minute range. It'll give you 0, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7 beats per measure, and has 8th note, triplet, and 16th note settings. Says it's easy to adjust volume control together with the ear pad, which reduces sound leakage. The ear hook fits on either ear, includes interchangeable silver and black faceplates, plus a lithium battery. It's $25. I've never used one of these, so I don't know how comfortable it is or is not. So you might want to try something like this before you buy it. Also in ear is the Korg MM1, the metronome. That's G-N-O-M-E. If the metronome above, that Korg MM2, wasn't small enough, you can use this one. It just fits right inside your ear. It looks a little bit like one of those wireless headset things. It's smaller than that, actually. And you know, you can certainly slip that in a case, any case. Probably easy to lose, though. So next up is tuners. Tuner is also a must-have. If you don't have one, consider a combination metronome tuner. That way, you can, for pretty much the same price for a lot of these, you can have both devices in one package. So if you want to learn exactly how in tune your horn is, you got to have a tuner. This device will show you exactly which notes are out of tune and how much correction each problem needs. A good example of this is the out-of-tune notes on trumpet on page 126, back in chapter whatever that was. Intonation problems, like, for example, the D, the low D, and the low C sharp, can be, when you first get a new horn, you should figure out exactly what you need to do with your slides, kicking those slides, to get those notes in tune, and a tuner will help this. The first one up is a Korg CA30. It's a chromatic tuner with the range from C1 to C8. And these are referring to the piano keyboard. And this is both lower and higher than you're going to need for trumpet. There's a calibration function, which is pretty cool. It lets you specify what the concert pitch is or what the reference pitch is. And it will produce a reference tone on an internal speaker. It's got an auto power off, which is great for me. I have a different one of these, because I always forget to turn mine off and it sucks the battery down. which you do have to buy. It's $20. There's an Arian UM70 metronome tuner. This has a mode for C, F, B flat, and E flat instruments. So if you play sax and you don't like transposing, this could be the one for you. Or trumpet. Well, of course you're not playing sax, you're playing trumpet, which is a B flat instrument, right? So if you don't like transposing, this might be a good choice for you. Its metronome functions are suitable for a range of musical styles. Tempo and beat can be finely adjusted, and rhythms are easily selected. It's got an earphone jack and a clip-on pickup, something most other metronomes don't supply, and it's only $10. I'll have links to all of these on the podcast website, which is trumpetbook.wordpress.com. Up next is the tuner I have. It's a Korg MT9000. It's a metronome tuner. It's going to subdivide the beat in many different patterns, from 16th notes to swing 8th notes. It'll click in meters up to 7 beats long, so 7/4 or 7/8. It's got an analog arm that sweeps back and forth, kind of like a pendulum metronome, but digitally recreated. It's got volume control, earphone jack. It can be calibrated like the one above, and has an analog arm to show pitch level, too. This is really important for fine distinctions in tuning. The Boss TU-80 is a reliable tuner. It's got a handy built-in metronome, 7 rhythms, 10 beats, animated LCD. It's got multiple features and an ultra-wide tuning range of almost 8 octaves. Yeah, I wish I had an 8-octave range. The TU-80 supports chromatic tuning. It's got something called AccuPitch, which sounds a tone when the pitch is correct. This might help you if you can't see. It's also got a reference tone play function that makes it easy to verify tuning by ear. And it tunes down to 5 flats. I'm not sure what that means. Tunes down to... Oh, you can... Well, I don't have one, so you'd have to experiment to find out what that actually means. I'm not sure what that means. And the ultra-thin body, it says, slides easily into guitar case, gig bag, backpack, or pocket. It's $29. The VSAM is a virtual strobe tuner. Now, strobe tuners supposedly are like the best tuners. They're very bulky and pretty expensive. This one's a virtual strobe tuner, audio tone generator, and a metronome in a pretty compact form. Strobe tuners, as I said, are very accurate. I haven't used this particular one, so I can't vouch for the accuracy of it, but it's probably pretty accurate. It detects notes accurately up to 1/1000th of a semitone, which is another word for a half step. The high output tone generator with VSAM offers 10 octaves of audible tones, which is way more than you need for trumpet, adjustable in 1/10th of a cent increments. So if you remember, there are 10 cents between half steps. So you can adjust this 20 times, and you'll go from one half step to another. So that's really, really sensitive. Probably more than you'd need. Its audiovisual metronome allows tap or dial-in tempo, adjustable beats per measure, beat subdivisions, and a stopwatch function. And for the low price of $249, you could have one. So up next is microphones. Trumpet is probably one of the loudest acoustic instruments on the planet, and many performance situations won't require you to make your horn even louder. However, if you're playing for large audiences in a loud band or playing with a Harmon mute and it'll need a little more volume, or of course you're recording, you're going to need a microphone and something to amplify the sound. Or in the case of recording, just something to record the sound. There are two types of microphones to consider, condenser mics and dynamic mics. So we'll cover dynamic mics first. Dynamic mics don't need a power source. The vibrations of the source, your horn in this case, are sensed by the mic, and the vibrations are turned into a signal that is sent to the soundboard. It's pretty simple. There's a little, like a tympanic membrane, a drum head, inside the mic, and it vibrates in sympathy with the vibrations it senses, sound. And then it sends that signal to whatever soundboard you're using. A great one is the SM58. It's from Shure, S-U-R-E. It's legendary for its ability to withstand abuse that would destroy any other mic. It's world-renowned for its distinctive upper mid-range presence peak. Okay, that's important for trumpet players. That ensures a lively sound. It perfectly fits the hand, although you'd probably be better off having a stand with it. Balanced for total comfort during long gigs. Frequency response is a smooth vocal tailored 50 hertz to 15 kilohertz, and the price is a bargain considering its life expectancy. Goes for $100. Got a couple of these. They work pretty well. Condenser mics is the other type. Condenser mics do need a power source. This can be batteries or what's called phantom power, which when you plug it in, it's a power source that's sent through the cord, the XLR that I talked about earlier, to the mic. Now, what this does is the power energizes a diaphragm, another drum head, a very small drum head, in the mic. And when it's powered like this, it's much more sensitive. So these are more sensitive mics. Because the diaphragm is powered, it reacts much more sensitively to the sound, you know, vibrations that it receives. A good one for this is another Shure model, S-U-R-E, SM57. It's one of the most popular professional instrumental vocal mics of all time. Natural sounding, durable, perfect at home or in the studio. It's got a wide frequency response, so 40 hertz to 15 kilohertz. That's more response in the low range than the dynamic mic. It's got a tight cardioid polar pattern, and it's ideal for close-in miking, so this is a great mic to use with your Harman Mute. Other options are clip-on and wireless mics. This is nice because the other mics that I just talked about are going to require a cord and a stand. You don't want to sit there and hold it. So the first one is an LCM77. This is a microphone developed in close association with Miles Davis. It allows space between the bell and the mic so you can fit a mute in the horn easily. Chris Bode is kind of a smooth jazz sort of guy. He endorses these, and he also plays with Sting, among other people. Another one is from Applied Microphone Technology. It's called the Rome 1. If you want to do it without the wires altogether, this is a great option. That LCM77 has wires, by the way. You have to be tethered. But this one, the Applied Microphone Technology Rome 1, is wireless. And the mic is in a shock mount to avoid the noise that you make when pounding down your valves. And like the other mic, there's still room for a mute. This one goes for about $580, so spendy. So with the mic, you have to have a microphone stand, cord, and probably some adapters is a good idea, too. I was talking about XLR cords, which is the three-prong cord. Often these go to a quarter-inch stereo mic, and that is going to be helpful if you run it into an amp or a soundboard or a recording device which doesn't have XLR inputs. So this is a little confusing if you can't see the pictures, but basically you've got a cord coming from your microphone. Some microphones have cords already installed. Those are usually cheaper and less high-quality microphones. Normally, you attach the three-prong XLR, the female end, to the microphone. The other end is often XLR as well, and if it goes into a soundboard, all soundboards have XLR inputs, so that's not going to be a problem if you have a soundboard. If you're going into an amp, however, you're going to need either an adapter or a cord that has XLR on one end and quarter-inch on the other end. There are all kinds of adapters to do this for you. One is from Planet Wave, or Planet Waves, I think, plural. Yeah. So in the book is a picture of this. And there's also a picture of the XLR mic cord to a quarter-inch jack. So this is a very handy thing to have. I have a couple of them. I just keep in my sound gear bag in case. So you also need a mic stand. There are two types. There's a basic mic stand, which is just basically a pole sticking up that will attach to your mic. You need a clip to attach to the mic. There's also a boom stand, which allows to get the mic out to places where a stand isn't going to reach. This is kind of helpful because then you're not like knocking into the stand or whatever. They take up a little more space and are a little more expensive. You can also use the clip-on mic, too, to your belt. Now, if you have a really small recording device, often, unless it's a professional level recording device, you're going to need 1/8-inch inputs. So it's a good idea. You can get XLR to 1/8-inch. You can also get 1/4-inch to 1/8-inch. And these are also made by Planet Waves, and I'll have links to these on the site. So that leads us to recording devices. This is one of the best ways to improve all aspects of your playing. You know, if you listen to what you've been working on, you can assess it in a way that you can't assess while you're playing. While you're playing, most of your cognitive load, as it's been called, most of your brain space is taken up with the playing, thinking about the musicality of it, you know, just performing the music. When you go back to listen to that without those other drains on your cognitive load, you have more brain space to pay attention to what it is that you played, and you can be more thorough with your assessment of whether it went well, whether it didn't go well, what you liked, what you didn't like and needs fixing, that sort of thing. So recording yourself is just essential. One of the lowest tech things is a cassette recorder. The major benefit of using a tape recorder is that they're really cheap and pretty easy to find for almost nothing, especially if you like garage sales. Cassette tapes are also cheap and easy to find. The downside is that the sound quality might not be all that hot, and to find a passage that recorded earlier can be difficult, especially if you've been recording for a while. You have to rewind, play, rewind, play. I've got a picture here of a Sony TCM-929, which is about $25, so pretty cheap. Garage sales, you can probably get it for a fifth of that or less. Another good option, this is kind of an old technology now too, but it works great, I still have one, is a mini disc recorder. There's a Sony Hi MD. This amazing tiny device holds up to 45 hours of recorded music. It's got, you know, can hold pictures, text. It's an AM/FM TV weather band receiver. Its battery lasts up to about 14 hours. It's a great little device. If you're serious about it, they're pretty handy. I have down here that they're $250. I'm guessing that they went down quite a bit. This book is 4 years old now, I think. So if you can even find one, there are some other options, such as the Korg Pandora multi-track recorder. This one is another device that I have that I really like. It's kind of high end. It's about $300. And the cool thing about this is that you can record one track, go back and record over the top of that, go back, record over the top of that. You can do this 4 times. And then if you want, you can bounce those down and continue the process. So if you have a trumpet quartet, say, you can play that trumpet quartet with yourself. It's pretty neat. Students really like using it. There's an even better option, though. And that is, if you have a computer, you can use Audacity. Audacity is a program that I am recording on at this very moment. It's free, and I'll have links to that on the podcast website as well. And there's also a Zoom H4N digital recording device. It's about $300. It's very small, has great sound quality, and it's got XLR inputs as well as 1/4-inch. Records in stereo. Sony has one out that is a little cheaper. I think it's $220 or somewhere around there. It's the ICDMX20D9R or DR9. It's for voice, so it might not be as high quality as the Zoom, but it'll do just fine, I think, for your purposes, for our purposes. So anyway, those are some of the recording devices available to you. You can find links for those, of course, at the podcast website. So up next, I'll talk a little bit about cases. This is kind of self-explanatory, but there are a couple that you might not be aware of. The first is the torpedo bag. And this is a cylindrical tube, and I actually have one. It was a birthday present, and I love it. It takes up very little room, and in the ads, you can see a car parked on top with one under each rear wheel. So they can take up to 400 pounds of pressure. It can be worn like a backpack. There's a bag that you can stick on there for your mutes, and a pouch for music as well. Another is the BAM Trekker backpack case. It's a high-end backpack case. It's got a waterproof cover, comfortable backpack straps that tuck into the case for convenience, and a shoulder strap if you want to do it that way. It's got an expandable sheet music pocket, an accessory pocket. It doesn't look all that big. And an additional waterproof cover for heavy rain. They're about $320. The torpedo bags are $160. You can get a leather one for a little more. But this BAM Trekker backpacker case is $320. There's the Gator lightweight case. It's real light, but it's lesser protection. And so, you know, lesser protection than a heavier case, obviously. Dense foam and exterior is covered with a heavy nylon. The interior is soft plush. And they've got an external pocket for gear, shoulder straps with D-rings, and detachable external elastic strap for carrying jackets or a music stand or whatever. It's only $40, so that's a pretty good price. There's a Gig backpack, which is a Cordura exterior and high-density foam interior that protects your instrument. Looks like a, you know, school backpack. So it's adjustable. And then there's compartments for mutes and things. It's a freestanding case, so you set it down and it'll stay there. And it's got four different colors for $50. Next up is gig bags. Reunion Blues gig bags is probably one of the better ones out there. I had used one of those for years and then got a very expensive horn that is better off not in a bag like that because the bag isn't all that much protection. They come in leather or nylon. It's a great case, especially for its smallness and its portability. $125. If you've got more than one horn, you can get dual, triple, quad cases, and you can find those online pretty easily. So now we're going to move into a whole other realm, electronic effects. Miles Davis began experimenting with these in the 60s, and there's so many different effects that there really isn't enough space to list them all here, but I'll give you a few of the more interesting and useful ones. So in order to use these, your trumpet sound has to be amplified through a sound system, using the mics and chords and everything else we talked about. So to modify your trumpet sound, you're going to use what's called an effect pedal. And it's put between the microphone coming from your sound and the amplifier, which is going to amplify the sound. You can turn them on or off with the tap of a foot. You can adjust how sensitive they are, how much signal they change. Guitar players use these all the time. They use it for anything like volume or wah-wah or fuzz or any kind of extra noise other than the clean, clear guitar tone. They're using a pedal or an effect. Maybe not through a pedal, but an effect. The pedals pretty much all look the same except for the color. They're adjustable, as I said, and they can range from $50 to $200 depending on the brand. The first thing isn't really an effect. It's a preamp. This is a way to gain more control over your amplified sound. The line from your microphone goes to this little box, usually clipped to your belt or a stand, and then from there to the house sound system. It's a good idea to do this for a couple reasons. So you just played a tune with your open horn, no mutes. The next tune you're going to use a Harmon mute, and you need a big boost of power to make that Harmon sound louder. With a preamp clipped to your pants, you can just twist the little dial. Otherwise, even if you have a sound technician, they have to boost your power and will probably either forget about you or do it incorrectly or, you know, it's better to have control of that yourself. So a preamp will give you that control. The first effect is reverb. This can be really useful, especially if you're playing in an acoustically dead room. In a dead room, the sound is muffled, absorbed by walls, carpets, drapes, people. Or draperies, sorry, for those of you sticklers in the English language, enclosed buildings usually. In a room, sound is reflected off the ceiling, the walls, the floor, and the sound heard at any given time is the sum of the sound from the source as well as all of the reflected sound. Reverb adds a slight echo to the sound and can make a room sound more live. Settings can be changed to fit the room you're in or the sound you want, so this is a useful one. Chorus gives the impression that more than one instrument or voice is playing. It's got its name because it makes the recording of a vocal track sound like it was sung by two or more people singing in chorus. This is done by adding a delayed signal, an echo, to the original input. The delay of this echo is varied continuously between a minimum delay and a maximum delay at a certain rate, and you can usually set those. Flange is one that I really like. It's the chorus effect on steroids. Flanging also uses an echo of the original input to get its sound, but it's a little more dramatic than the chorus effect. It has this swirling, whooshing, sort of pulsating sound that's pretty cool. Before the digital effect was invented, flanging was created by sound engineers who put their finger onto the tape reel's flange, thus slowing it down. Two identical recordings are played back simultaneously, and one is slowed down slightly to give the flanging effect. But now we do it digitally, much easier. Distortion is going to add signal noise to your sound, not something that many trumpet players have messed around with, lately anyway, but, you know, it could be fun. I think Miles used this a little bit. Guitars use this a lot, especially for harder edge, heavier rock, and you know, metal. It's a pretty cool effect. There's also a really cool effect called the wah-wah pedal. Its technical name is parametric equalization. It's an interesting effect. You probably heard it. Guitars use the wah-wah pedal to make their guitar kind of talk. It's cool. It's funky. It's often used in funk. I've experimented a little with one of these, and it's pretty fun. Instead of spending $110, though, you can just get a harmon mute with a plunger. I mean, with a stem or a plunger. Okay, so the very last thing is a Boomerang 4 megabyte phrase sampler. So this cool device allows you to layer parts in forward or reverse. You can create loops up to 4 minutes long and play reverse leads if you want. It's got two independent loops, and each has seven different decay rates, meaning, you know, when the sound fades away, including no decay at all. It'll transpose your sound down a second, a fourth, a fifth, a seventh, and an octave. It's got a foot roller volume control, so you can just work this with your foot, and a record button can be turned on or off during playback. It's $430, at least it was several years ago, so that's a spendy one, but very interesting. I have a similar device for my guitar, and I actually, when I need it for trumpet, I'll mic my trumpet and run it through my foot pedal and create delays that way. So that's it for chapter 20. Up next, you know, you don't really need any of these gadgets to get out there and play music for people. You just need a horn. You know, in fact, all this stuff in some ways just gets in the way. I really like going to a gig where all I need is my horn and my mutes. It's really nice. Not having to haul all that junk, let alone looking for the right cord or batteries or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there are a lot of players in the world who play only for their own enjoyment, but there's really something different about going out and sharing your music with other people. It's fun, it's challenging and rewarding. It can also be completely nerve-wracking. And so getting out there to play for people can be intimidating. But there are ways around all those challenges, and if you're like me and are pretty nervous when you have to go play for people, I can maybe help you deal with some of that stuff. And that's going to be in next chapter, chapter 21, Practice of Performance, and hopefully it won't be a month before I get to that. So have fun. Good luck with your practice.